This week, we take a look at an answer on how to preserve the craft written in the 1980s, specifically the grand jurisdiction of Virginia, and one research lodge attempt to fix the problems. Then, in a continuing thread on leadership, we have probably one of the most educated opinions on the topic. Brother Mark St. Cyr weighs in and asks the no-nonsense, real questions. Ask not what rules the Grand Lodge makes for you, but what rules you make for the Grand Lodge. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 625. It's going to be a lot of fun. Lots of great fellowship and all of that. I also want to let everybody know that the Illinois Lodge of Research is going to be putting together three symposiums this year, so a sort of triannual symposium. Smaller in nature, a couple of speakers at each event, lots of fellowship, and some great Masonic education. The theme for these events is going to be Masonic history. I think that's something that many people really enjoy. And this is thanks to our senior warden at the Illinois Lodge of Research, Brother James E. Fry, and with the backing of our current worshipful master, Brother David Truax, who has graciously supported this event, and we're very much in line to create something special here. Before we get too far into the show, I want to thank our supporters, our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. Without you, we can't make it the way we do. And we've been doing it for over 10 years. Don't want to do something on a monthly level? Consider making a one-time gift. Regardless of what you decide to do, you can head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, check out the various options available. We also have a shop. We have Skull and Crown Limited. Basically, anything that comes from our website or any of the websites we're affiliated with, the cash all goes back to supporting this program. So we want to thank you guys in advance for anything you decide. We took a little break last week, but continuing on the thread of leadership, why are we hung up on this a little bit? Well, because it is a huge, monumentally huge issue within the fraternity, and there are so many viewpoints on this that they must be sort of compiled into a best practices, or at least, in the very least, I should say, the ability to put them all together so that we can gain many different perspectives at once. Now, this week I'm going to be reading a Declaration for Masonic Action that comes by Kenneth H. Hooley, and this was written a number of years ago. But I'm also going to have the latest piece that was penned by Brother Mark St. Cyr on this episode, which you had heard a little bit about on the top of the episode. With that, let's get into the first piece this week, a Declaration for Masonic Action. Now, as I get into this, I do want to mention that there are some religious overtones to this piece, notably from the Western Christian tradition. I will not filter any of that. I'm just going to read it as it was written. A Declaration for Masonic Education by Kenneth H. Hooley. Let me open by saying that I realize that the A. Douglas Smith Jr. Research Lodge, 1949, is normally engaged in passive research. That is to say that its usual preoccupation lies in the collection, collation, and interpretation of past and present events with Freemasonry for the use and benefit of future generations. However, our fraternity now faces a serious national decline in membership of alarming proportions. It has been entrenched for at least 10 years. In 1974, National Blue Lodge membership stood at 4 million. At the end of 1984, membership had declined to about 3 million, a straight line attrition of about simple 2.5% per year. This is the most optimistic analysis. More likely, this decline is tracing a parabolic curve, like a mortgage wherein the remaining balance reduces to a year vertical descent in the latter years of the mortgage term. On this basis, National Masonic membership could well be near only 500,000 within the next 35 years. Consider the consequences against the backdrop of positive growth in national population. This means that Freemasonry is in crisis. It also means that strong and appropriate corrective measures must be implemented as quickly as possible. Our present Grand Master is most concerned with this problem. He is certain to be receptive to a well-conceived composite plan of action by this research lodge. At least 75% of your membership must comprise an impressive array of leadership titles and experience which range from worshipful master to past Grand Master. Therefore, this research lodge represents a unique reservoir of ingenuity and Masonic capability within the grand jurisdiction of Virginia. The greatest of all spiritual Masons, the Nazarene, pointed out an eternal truth which applies to all here and now present. By their works ye shall know them. In view of the gravity of this Masonic hour, I urge you to depart from passive to active research and development. What other Masonic body in Virginia is better equipped to perform this most important task? Our Grand Lodge has already taken certain steps in the right direction. This means there already exists a problem awareness and receptivity to a well-conceived composite plan of action. The Supreme Architect needs your best present effort. Your most worshipful Grand Master severely needs your present help. It is a situation similar to the Soviets' first launch of Sputnik. It is comparable to President John F. Kennedy's call for a U.S. space effort to be the first to land on the moon. So, then was pressed into service a massive pool of active research and development, such as the world had never seen before. With these thoughts in mind, let me urge that this august research lodge seriously ponder and develop a complete blueprint of procedure from the following Declaration for Masonic Action. Let what comes forth be an equitable and honorable blueprint to achieve the correct goal of renewed Masonic growth by equitable and honorable means. Our membership decline has two basic causes. One, the first is that negative attitudes and practices within the ranks of past leadership have been too long allowed to infect the general membership. Two, the second cause is that this leadership has failed to ascertain and to positively apply appropriate corrective changes in the outer workings of the craft. You must accept as axiomatic that the inner condition which causes the outer manifestation can only be changed by a persistent and habitual effort to modify or change the outer from without through presently established centers of control. This will slowly induce the eventual cleansing of the inner causes so as to stabilize the renovated exterior Masonic structure. Remember the law, as within, so without. The leverage we must employ is conscious effort toward changing the present effortless drift of destructive negativism into positive, purposeful, and prolonged constructive outer action. 9 items for action. Number 1. Freemasonry must cleanse, overhaul, and rebuild its various levels of leadership by proven techniques of reprogramming. So long as these techniques remain within the parameters of the Masonic value system as to both the spirit and the letter. Our Grand Lodge has already established a leadership training program that can probably be further refined. We also must be prepared to accept the probability that adjustments must be made in administrative policies and recorded laws and bylaws. Number 2. Freemasonry must effectively deal with the fact that its future rests solely upon the quality of today's youth and all of the hereafter tomorrows. To that end, let me suggest that the Grand Lodge of Virginia officially and actively support the growth of the Order of DeMolay. This includes the lowering of DeMolay admission into the Blue Lodge to 18. Conditionally, the condition should be that the DeMolay member agrees in writing not to petition any other Masonic body for a period of 6 years. Let me also suggest that every Blue Lodge be required to establish and maintain the DeMolay required Masonic committee to recruit and develop DeMolay chapters throughout the grand jurisdiction. Number 3. Every newly raised Master Mason age 21 and older should be restricted from petitioning any other Masonic body for 3 years, during which time he will be expected to complete the Grand Lodge Masonic Education course. Also, let it be known to him that during this 3-year period he will be expected to be reasonably active in degree work or some Masonic community service of his choice. Admonish him, as well, that failure to do so will mean that when he is eligible to petition other Masonic bodies, he will have to do so without the written commendation of his worshipful master. Number four, we should also adopt a twofold plan of indirect recruitment. Part A, wives and other female members of each Masonic family should be encouraged to invite male relatives of their families and friends to request of a known Master Mason a petition for membership to a DMLA chapter or Blue Lodge. Part B, each Master Mason should likewise be urged to request the female members of his family and those of his friends to petition Job's Daughters and or the Order of the Eastern Star. Number 5. We should encourage the establishment of daylight lodges or daylight stated meetings by existing Blue Lodges in those areas or districts where there exists sufficient number of brethren who cannot, because of their occupation, attend evening meetings. Number 6. Within each lodge, a system of buddy committees should be established. The function of these committees should be to make personal contact with inactive members. The committee member would make personal contact with inactive brethren to invite them, or him, with spouse to his home for an informal Masonic family evening or afternoon. At least the committee member could telephone such brethren two or three times per year simply for friendly chat. Such occasions should be especially directed to the ascertainment of that brother's special personal interests and skills. Then a suggestion should be made that these attributes would be most helpful to lodge activities. Ask the brother to come and share them with his Blue Lodge program. Number 7. The Blue Lodge should be encouraged to produce at least one Masonic family event per year, such as a potluck dinner, which would feature an after-dinner speaker or entertainment program. Outside talent could be used, of course. However, it would be especially interesting to utilize whatever family talent that might be available. There should also be appointed brethren as hosts who would mix with the group and see that everyone is personally welcomed and introduced to those who are not well known. The remaining two items deal with the most important principle of projection. That is to say that Freemasonry must first seek and discover the most essential needs and constructive wants of the locale or communities where its Blue Lodges operate. Freemasonry must then send forth its membership into the community to assist in the development of resources and means to operate the machinery of the chosen objective. The utilization of this vital principle is what enabled Freemasonry to function as builders of the government of the United States and the society which is supposed to direct and control that government. Such was the character of Freemasonry in the 18th and 19th centuries. It was this precise purpose for which the ancient brethren originated Freemasonry in the first place. Throughout most of the 20th century thus far, this purpose and function has been abandoned by Freemasonry. It is, in this century, how the word of the Master Mason, the Builder, has been all but lost. Even worse, for too long, two bodies of the Masonic tree have been allowed to use and abuse the auspicious Blue Lodge Freemasonry for their own ends. This has resulted in projecting a negative image upon the mind of the general public. These conditions must be brought under control and reversed if efforts to regenerate the desirability and positive influence of Freemasonry in the culture and society of America are to succeed. Number 8. Each Blue Lodge or group of lodges within a Masonic district should promote and execute at least one Masonic community event such as a Masonic fair. It should feature competitive exhibitions of arts, crafts, entertainments, etc., awarding ribbons and prizes for the best. Number 9. Each lodge should develop a project of community service designed to best utilize its reservoir of membership and membership/family skills and talents. For example, our communities have a growing number of single-parent households. We must realize the severe handicap that these families may suffer. We should seek them out. We should share with them our own family attention and help them to the extent of our cable toe. By so doing, as Blue Lodge Masons and Masonic families, we serve God, country, and greatly enrich our own lives with spiritual fulfillment. Another example. A most tragic development of our time is the alarming growth of teenage suicide. Each lodge or group of lodges within each Masonic district should establish a youth problem counseling service. The functioning of that service would be to offer the youth adult special help toward the realization of their constructive ambitions and dreams and desires for self-fulfillment. The service should solicit volunteer assistance by professional help, such as educational counselors, psychologists, and social workers who are already within the locale or community. If we as Masons and Masonic families make a serious commitment to such service projects within our communities, our Masonic and Eastern Star membership problems will soon begin to abate and eventually disappear. Outsiders will want to become a part of our orders. We shall then be sowing good seed upon fallow ground. We shall then be cultivating with diligence and patience, and we shall, with certainty, harvest the good fruit to the benefit of ourselves, our fraternity, our family, our country, and to the glory of God, our supreme architect. As ye sow, so shall ye reap, said the shepherd of Bethlehem. This is another aspect of the law of duality, and as we first do so in the outer, from the living unconscious within each of us, shall eventually come forth the light which shines from within the temple not made with hands. This great truth is also eloquently expressed by Portia, the lady attorney in Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice. She refers to the power of a single candle which shines forth from a sea of darkness. Let me now finish with this contemplation. Every human life must choose to ignore or to learn from the failures and accomplishments of the past. The energies of life demand that we respond to the present with positive richness of sharing and caring hearts, or with negative emptiness and barren and stark. Of the future, we must all await a time with patience until at last we discover what we today upon Mother Earth have cast. So it is with Freemasonry. The shadow of declining membership continues to lengthen. Is this the growth of tomorrow's fruitful womb? Or is it the opening of Freemasonry's tomb? The answer to one of these questions will characterize the future of Freemasonry. This is the late hour when Masonic leadership must choose which price is to be paid. The administration of strong medication and perhaps some surgery, or the tragic loss and cost of a great fraternal funeral. The Supreme Architect has decreed seasons wherein we must die for his greater causes, but he also has provided sowing and growing seasons where we must choose to live and labor and to create our very own lesser causes. Brethren, which course shall we choose to take? High 12, now past Meridian, forces upon us a choice to make. Must we not return to labor until the sun has set upon the stallion in the west, when then we may adjourn to rest and celebrate? Well, there you have a declaration for Masonic action, certainly coming from a place of likely frustration and concern for the fraternity. I am not overly excited about most of these points. However, I believe in the intention behind them. Obviously, we're looking at trying to grow the fraternity here, and his thought on 500,000 is not far off. I think we're probably around 700,000 to 800,000 Masons in the United States. But of course, this doesn't take into consideration all of the lodges that are not being counted amongst those Masons, like Prince Hall, or what is considered to be irregular amongst Mailcraft Masonry, Women's Masonry, and Co-Masonry. There is a wide swath of Freemasonry that exists outside of what we might consider, you know, our normal channels. So the number of Masons is much greater than the Masonic Services Association of North America says it is, and that's just food for thought. I do like the idea of a Masonic community event, like a Masonic fair. I love fairs, so that's probably why. But in all seriousness, I think this offers at least some thoughts on what your, I guess, more typical non-education-focused lodge might be after. So, obviously, this comes from Virginia, from the Virginia Lodge of Research, and I hope you enjoyed. Next up, let's get into this awesome new piece from Brother Mark St. Cyr. Let's check it out.
For the Once Came You podcast, I'm Mark St. Cyr, with my own commentary on the current kerfuffle that we'll say is going on within the fraternity, and my reaction to it. But there are also lessons to be distilled for those that want to look deeper. So let's start right in, shall we? The issue in leadership is determining who and why. Over the course of the last several weeks, there has been nothing short of what can only be described as reserved outrage pointed at both the decisions as well as accusations directed squarely at the leadership throughout the fraternity. The current trepidations and revelations in Texas and the Scottish Rite Northern jurisdiction are just two of the latest. Much of this is playing out in full view for all to see, even the profane. That alone should tell all one needs to know about the severity of it. However, with that said, what's truly been astonishing to those of us watching from afar is during all of this, many in the leadership are now calling for leadership training. But not for themselves, but for the rank and file. You just can't make this stuff up, as I'll express as we go on. This is why it's becoming so profound in both veracity as well as vociferousness in the responses to it. Now, since this whole leadership thing, along with the teaching of it, has entered into the current discussion, I find it only fitting to opine with my own overview of analysis, since in many respects, I'm probably more qualified. In other words, I'm actually a recognized business expert and thought leader in the media, as they say, than most to weigh in. While I also, I'm a current member of the fraternity. So with that said, here's my two cents. The first premise of true leadership is this: do they have the actual power and authority to enforce change? Or are they assumed to have this authority because it's just never been challenged? Titles don't matter here. Power does. Think of a union strike as an example. Who really is the leader with the true power for change in this situation? People will argue semantically, but the power for change does not always reside where one thinks at first blush. Now let me illustrate. Much of this reminds me of a discussion I was privy to that happened years ago, taking place at one of the largest insurance firms in the U.S. with its senior leadership. In other words, its C-suite. It taught me something I never forgot and helped forge my own efficacy when dealing with just these types of issues. It went like this. In conversational form, let me put it this way. I'm going to use them. In other words, they are the current leadership. They're the ones asking the questions. And the responses is coming from the other side. And it goes like this. Them. We're having issues with our franchises not doing what we want or need them to do. We are implementing changes that are cost-effective and are helping streamline everything. Yet they won't conform. They keep doing things the old way and won't change because they see no need to. Yet, when they submit their work for entry, we all but have to redo it entirely just to get it into our system. I mean, it's costing the company now double the work and double the expense than we were before our change. When we tell them about this, their response is basically, then just go back to the way it was. In other words, the way that they're still doing it. And the problem's solved. We try explaining. We try showing. We show with real examples that this new way is truly better for them. But they don't care. They will not change and are now venturing on insubordinately so. We're at our wits' end and don't know what to do. We've tried everything previous consultants have argued we do and none of it has worked. We're hoping maybe you have a different approach that will. The response. If you decided to close all your franchises, could your customers still buy insurance from you? Them. Then in complete silence, someone says, I'm sorry, can you repeat that? Response comes back. If you decided to close all your franchises, could your customers still buy insurance from you? Them. Again, silence. And a lot of looking back and forth at each other, till finally one squeamishly says, well, I guess they can if we converted the portal now used for our franchises to be opened directly with a few other modifications. Yeah. I guess we could, but this company is built on a franchise model. Without them, we have no business. The response comes back. If you, in other words, the company, declare there's no franchise model any longer going forward and it will be phased out entirely, are you still able to sell insurance to customers? The response was, well, yes. The response comes back. All right. So just to be clear, if the franchisees tell you they are no longer a franchisee, can they still sell your insurance? The response from them comes back, no, of course not. And this is where things change. Because it's here, The response is, then the issue here is, it's not that you can't control or run your business efficiently because of internal compliance issues. It's because you're not addressing the where and what aspect to apply and to do this for compliancy. You're acting like you're trying to herd cats, which is a futility in itself. But you don't have cats, or in the modern business vernacular, independent jobbers. You have franchise subsidiaries selling your product and your product only. You have to start acting, thinking, as well as doing the required hard steps of enforcement to it. Other than that, you don't really have a business under your control, regardless of it being worth billions. You're just a paper tiger figurehead at the whim of any or all franchises that can or may not already be making you less competitive to more efficient players. It's only a matter of time that you too will be one of those once great names for the history books if you don't act now and with resolve. So of course, the response comes back, what do you recommend? And here was what was recommended. Compose a letter stating to the effect, due to unresolvable compliance issues throughout the franchisee network, allowing competitors to gain further market share within our markets, we have decided to begin the discussions for implementation, ending the franchise model. During this period, we will no longer be issuing any new ones, and we will be looking to both hear, discuss, and work with current franchisees to both help and support converting current franchisee office into owned and directed corporate divisions. We look forward to your input as we engage in this important possible transition. Thank you, the management. So with what you just heard, what do you think happened? Here, let me save you some time. Once the initial knee-jerk of you can't do that settled, and the realization, the response of, maybe, but that's what we're proposing, so we look forward to your input, then standing firm into it, compliance went from herding cats to a stampede into the compliance corral in there overnight. That franchise model is still in place today, and the efficacy promised was delivered to the benefit of all. In other words, it wasn't a power move type thing. Now, here's where this gets a little bit funny. With the all above laid out, I'm going to imagine, because I can hear you through my screens, there are many in what some might call of a leadership, reading this or listening to it and thinking, see, that's right, we're right, we should do exactly this, that'll fix things the way we believe it should be. But the problem here is that type of thinking. In other words, I picked this scenario precisely because it is the exact opposite of that thought, which is true. In other words, the current leadership doesn't have this power to do or force this complicity. It is the franchisees, or the lodges, that do. This model moves both ways, and knowing the difference, which is why I get paid the big bucks, as they say, is what separates true leaders from those that think they are. And this usually comes to the complete and utter surprise when things go awry. It's also why many leadership teams, C-suites, etc., find themselves in positions of fighting one fight when they really should either be fighting another or not fighting at all. Let's go into a little bit of elaboration here, shall we? Let me ask you a few simple questions. But what I want you to do is I don't want you to mentally knee-jerk any type of answer like, ah, but the rules! Just answer in a yes or no in relation to the actuality of the possibility. Ready? Here's a question. If a lodge surrenders or its charter is revoked, can the men still practice all the tenets of Masonry and assemble as Freemasons for not only companionship, but also to collect and consolidate funds for the building, accoutrements, and upkeep while dispensing what it feels is Masonic education-based experiences within its walls? And just for the sake of argument, because buildings are, sometimes tethered to the Grand Lodges, let's also say, for the sake of argument, it leaves its current building and rents another somewhere else. If that above statement, in other words, what you just heard, can be answered yes, then what is the need of the current leadership? Now, I know the knee-jerk action to this is going to be, well, the charter, which for all intents and purposes is nothing more than, for the simplicity of this discussion, means legitimacy. In other words, sanctioned and approved by the ruling authority. But that's the problem. Who gives the authority the authority? Many are going to take real issue with this premise, especially those in leadership. But let's use a few other examples to test my reasoning, shall we? Now note, just to be clear, the following premises are based solely on U.S. models and are for thought experiment only, not actual suggestions or anything other. So let's dive in. Prince Hall. Last time I looked, this segment of Masonry not only formed, but has been thriving since 1784. And although there has been great advances in the recognition throughout the U.S., the reality is still apparent. Although it would be a shame if recognition never materialized, the obvious fact is, did it or does it matter in general for the brethren of it? Hint, it didn't matter in 1784, so why would it now? Another, the shrine. What would happen not only to the recruitment numbers, but more importantly, the yearly re-ups of current dues members if paying members were told the requirement to be a Mason is no longer a requirement? How about another? Let's use the Rite, the Scottish Rite. What if the Rite decided, rather than wait and hope recruitment efforts that they have both designed, paid for, and in some cases nearly had to beg other Grand Lodges to use, in other words, the not just a man, a Mason, just for one example, to help attract new members. They simply decide to focus all their attention and all their dollars solely into their own jurisdictions. In other words, they both craft and deliver meaningful initiations starting at entered, then fellow, then Master Mason. Then they continue much like they do through the others. Now many of you will say, well, no way, can't be done. Maybe. But I'll counter with, if Blue Lodges, and by extension the current Grand Lodges controlling them, can't deliver enough possible recruits for the Rite itself, does one think the Rite is just going to say, well, okay, yep, guess we should close up shop now because the Lodges can't attract men wanting to be Masons? Again, I'm going to ask you, do you really think that? Really? Now, maybe I'll ask another way. What is the difference between the Rite and the Shrine in respects to whom it can or will admit, if there were no Grand Lodge systems at all? Can it and could it both practice its current tenets along with serve its membership much like it does now, other than a certification? And if the answer to that question is yes, then what is the dominating role for the current leadership? Again, I ask, what? Currently, every argument I have read, listened, or been privy to concerning current leadership in many Grand Lodge jurisdictions is that the leadership is now trying to promote compliance to it through offering leadership training-styled motions. The problem with this that can be seen a million miles away from anyone that understands true leadership principles, doctrines, efficacy, or anything else you want concerning it in the real world, not the consulting class fairy tale viewpoint, is this. To be a true leader, you first have to fully know and understand if you truly have the authority of it, or is your current leadership position only being held together by a very thin veneer that's yet to be tested, and dangerously close to being just that because of the current state of said leadership's actions. Just because one has a title doesn't mean what one thinks it does in real-world application. Again, and to be clear, the only thing about this is dogmatic consulting class-driven leadership thinking and practices would be so foolish to think they are the ones that should be creating and enforcing because they are titled the leadership. Because history shows it's precisely this type of thinking and execution that is the eventual last gasp of failed ones. Another way of these things has to be understood is right now, things are going to change one way or another because they have to. And the question now is, what truly is all this push for leadership training? Is it A, The current leadership understands that following its current leadership path is looking to course correct through remediation of lower status members in hope something positive comes forth. Or, the current push for leadership training is only being pushed by leaders that don't truly know why things are failing and are simply doubling down on any effort to try and stem any current innate leadership to fix obvious problems. Or C, someone read some best-selling leadership management book and decided it was a bestseller, and it is their year, then it must be the perfect remedy for such a vexing problem, because after their year is over, it's someone else's problem, and they can have some sort of shield saying, well, we tried. My guess is a combination of all three, but through experience in past matters, I'd be more toward the C than most of the others. Why, you may ask, I say that? It's because of this. I put most, again, most, not all, business books, especially the so-called bestsellers, into a category that infuriates most. And that category is romance novels. And the reason why is because it's simply this. It all sounds so sweet, easy, laced with prospects of enduring passion and cooperation forever, laced in flowery language, all wrapped up in a beautiful bound bouquet of colorful typeset covers. And who can argue with a great love story, right? Even if it is pure rubbish. Now, the reason for this derision is simple. After reading and applying most of what they've read in these romance novellas, I'm the one that's usually called in to help settle the now ongoing divorce proceedings that have now become mired with infighting, backbiting, and legal maneuvering that would make a court jester blush. This whole leadership thing, this rise and all this derision within the current, let's just say, press, it can all be fixed with near immediacy if only one thing transpired, for the good of everyone. And that is this. True leaderships don't just sit behind closed doors drafting leadership pros for others to follow. They get out in front of the others and boldly shout, follow me, as they admirably set the examples for others to follow and aspire to imitate. That's done, again, by example, and from the top, not by some leadership class to the underlings. For there's a law of leadership that's never broken, yet little understood by most, which is this. Subordinates do what they see their leaders do. You can't train the subordinate to be better if the upper echelons are seen as not playing by the same rules. It never has worked and won't ever either. If you want people to follow your leadership, you had better make sure it's true and on point, because subordinates will emulate whatever good or bad is obvious. Right now, leadership throughout the craft appear to be doing anything and everything in full public view that any sane person looking in would determine to be nothing but calamitous, unbecoming, and totally anathema to what the self-described making good men better implies. How many potential inquirers have been lost just because of these types of leadership squabbles in the last 2 months alone? Never mind what we've seen aired over the last few years collectively. Maybe if there's leadership training, it should be had and done at the top first. Because advocating it through the general membership isn't leadership. Think about it. I'm Mark St. Cyr. Thanks for listening.
All right, as usual, Brother Mark St. Cyr, straight business, no filter. I love it. He brings to mind a couple of items that I think were very direct, that I had been kind of dancing around, and perhaps others were too. And this is the idea that what training in leadership do the leaders have? Or is it just that supposed they've absorbed these skills through the years of being in the line? Which I think is completely erroneous. In fact, recently I had added a question to our own Grand Lodge Facebook post, which had asked about what kind of training our leadership gets in order to qualify them to teach leadership or to have anything to say about it. And is that training available to all? Or is it available through our leadership after our leadership has gone through the training and a subsequent train the trainer program? No surprise that instead of answering that question, I was admonished for asking that question. What are your motives, Robert? I have no motive other than I was curious on what leadership classes that the leadership had access to and if regular members had access to those as well. But, of course, by answering that question, which I assume is that there is no leadership training, it's just assumed that leaders can be leaders because they waited long enough, and they know long enough through osmosis, apparently, that it's unquestionable. So, take that for what it's worth, and I want to thank Brother Mark Saints here for taking the time to record this for us and for his thoughts on the topic. So that's it for this week. I want to thank you all for joining us. Please leave any comments or questions, curiosities, anything you want to talk about this episode in the Craftsman Plus Facebook group. Of course, always open to the conversation there. If you're curious on how to support this program, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out those various options. I want to thank our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners who are currently out there supporting this show every month and making it happen. Again, this show doesn't happen without you all, and we're your trusted source for Masonic education worldwide. So thanks so much. We'll talk to you all next week, and until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
Media.